Working with couples in conflict, essential skills. Dr. Susan Heitler is a clinical psychologist at Rose Medical Center in Denver and author of the integrative psychotherapy book, From Conflict to Resolution. In this three-part series, Dr. Heitler clarifies a conceptual framework for therapy with couples and demonstrates intervention techniques. Part 3. What do I do when they start fighting in the session?
Is the big question. What do I do when they get into a big fight right in my nice, peaceful office? Do you have answers to this already? It's real important to be prepared ahead of time, as in any major project, to have your plans of action, your what ifs, what I'll do, ready. And I'm going to suggest, in a sense, three plans of action overall. And they correspond to the three parts of therapy. The basic principle is you got to know where you're going. You got to know if you want to reduce the symptoms, in this case, the symptom of anger, if you want to use the anger in order to make movement in the flow from conflict to resolution of a specific issue that you're guiding them on, or if you want to use the anger to help them understand their process, their pattern for dealing with conflicts. So we're going to go in this section through the same fight three times. Each time we're going to aim for one of those different objectives. I want to preface with another example of a case that I just did yesterday that really struck me. This is an alternative technique for symptom reduction. They began to get into a fight. She tends to be depressive. He tends to have a paranoid structure, and he begins attacking as soon as he feels at all threatened. And she brought up in a sort of understated, sort of sweet, quietly attacking way we've been doing so well, and then this last week, you were back to your old self, and you were grumping around, and you never smiled at me, and, you know, I felt terrible. Okay, her bringing it up is half and half. There was a fair amount of I, and just enough you to hook him. So he came back at it. You're the one that's always negative. You bitch at me constantly. It was the old attack as if they hadn't been in therapy for a year. I thought, oh, here we go again. Rule number one, when they start fighting, do something. Do something. So I said, hey, cut it out. He kept going. Fortunately, I have four children, so I'm used to stopping. And before that, I used to be a teacher. So in my most authoritatively parental teacher voice, I said, stop it. Both of you close your eyes. You don't just say stop it. You lead them on to the next activity. Okay, stop it. Now, both of you close your eyes and take a deep breath. Take another and then I began to move from the aggressive to a quieter tone. Take another deep breath and use all your very best ability to be self-soothing as I breathe along with them. Focus in on what's going to calm you down. Because as we've talked about before in here, you're responsible for calming yourself down, and you're responsible for calming yourself down. And feel as you're getting quieter in your breathing. So you walk them into that state. And then I said, now, I want you to picture one of the nicest times you two have had together recently. And get back in touch with that really fun, pleasant feeling you had together. I wanted to make sure that they were not in the angry and depressed mode again, but that they were back in normal, cooperative state. And then I wanted to ensure that they would keep that once they opened their eyes. So I said, now next I want you to visualize yourselves in this office. Something that you could do when I tell you to open your eyes, it would be kind of a nice gesture toward the other person. Something kind of nice. Nothing dramatic, just simple. Or another variation of this is, now it's sort of hypnotic technique, but another variation is, I want you to picture yourself going on with the session in a real calm, pleasant way. And then I want it to be extra certain. And it's the same principle as when you tell them to stop it, you move them on to the next activity. I wanted to control the next thing that would happen when they open their eyes. So I said, as you open your eyes, I'm going to give one of you something. And I looked frantically around the room to figure out, what was I going to give them? And I had a little picture that someone had given me of a butterfly. I said, okay, you can open your eyes. And I reached over and got the butterfly and gave it to him. And I said, okay, you can do something with the butterfly, hoping he wouldn't smash her with it. With that kind of assistance, in fact, he looked over at her and he grinned a big grin and he said, I'd like to give you a present. She looked so touched, but it's hard for her to accept presents. She said, oh, thank you. But it's not ours. It belongs in the office. So I said, you can do something with it, hoping they wouldn't take it, because in fact, I love this butterfly. And she said, well, maybe we could put it up somewhere. And so they spent the next couple minutes finding where they could hang it in the room. And I got a hammer and was very thankful they used it for hammering the butterfly on the wall, not each other. Yeah. The point to that, though, is that you want to keep clear in your mind the principle that we all know, which is that he's not responsible for calming her. She's not responsible for calming him. But you are responsible for calming both of them. Okay, that is one technique that you can keep in mind. We're going to do another technique that is critically important, and it's called the caucus. This time, we've been in the middle of a session where we're talking about what to do with a 19-year-old daughter who just dropped out of college and is back in town mooching off them. And he's really quite feeling quite attacked, and you want to go ahead and attack him.
Hal, don't you understand what you're doing to her by giving her that money without my consent? You don't know anything about parenting, I think, sometimes.
It's my money. I can give it to
her. What is this? Your money? It's our. She's our daughter.
Stop. Cut. Step out. Just step out in the waiting room for a sec. I'll have you come back in just a few minutes. You step out. Okay. All right. Cut. What I did there was, in political terms, called a caucus. That is, I would simplify the situation by meeting in a subgroup, in this case with the one other person, with the husband. And it might take a minute, it might take 5 minutes, and then I'd step out and I'd say with a big smile, okay, your turn. Would you rather have time alone with me now like he did, or would you want to come in together? And I'd be cheerful and she'd be much more relaxed. Now, in fact, I let this go a little more than I would in the office. In the office, one angry statement, and I'm right in there, but I wanted them to come to a boil just to demonstrate it here. Hal, you want to go out and get Heidi? Thanks. She was so cooperative about jumping up and leaving. But you know what? She was just like patience. There's the occasional patient who doesn't want to let go of their angry stuff, but most patients are so thankful to be able to either bail out or to stomp out. And if they want to stomp, let them stomp. But just make sure your instruction is clear. Wait for me in the waiting room, and I'll come get you in a few minutes. Yeah. You had a question.
Well, have you ever lost your patience at that point? The way she stopped out, I was sure she would not come back.
The only time I had a problem was one time when I saw the warning signs. Like, did you hear how they went two or three times here? I want to reiterate, I would never do that. The only time I ever let something go, and it was no more than these two times, the guy then picked up her purse and threw it at her. And that really got me angry. They didn't stomp out, but I told them, I'm sorry, I'm not going to work with you. Because I had four little children, and all I could think of was, I don't want to put myself in danger. Let somebody else work with them. This isn't for me. And also because once they threw it, I got furious. I didn't act it out. But, I just felt like I'm not going to be in a situation where I'm not completely in control.
What was your question? I forgot your question.
Did they ever just walked out?
Vacation. Yeah. And they had come in individual cars. And the one individual didn't stop to raise it. They left.
I am thinking of one other time when someone left altogether. It was not on my initiative. I think they're more likely to stay if it's on your initiative and you do it in a kindly way. Usually the person that I ask to leave is not the angry one. I ask the calmer one, can you step out for a minute? And I stay with the angry one. But not always. That's not a rigid rule. Someone actually, we went through this morning. I was dealing with something with the husband, and he said something that really set her off. And she stood up. She said, I'm not taking this. I'm leaving. And I said, I think that's a good idea. Why don't you wait in the waiting room, and I'll come get you in just a couple seconds. Yes, question.
I guess you may cover these. But, some people talk about allowing the couple to fight a little bit in the room initially, when you're in that sort of...
There is no circumstance where I find it appropriate, and that's to get a diagnostic impression of what goes on, to get diagnostic information. Other than that, I find it totally inappropriate. It's condoning something. So I would let it go a little bit longer in order to see at what point they de-escalate in the first session or second session. And then I would immediately afterwards say something like, normally in these sessions, I don't allow fighting. The only reason I let you go there for a little bit longer was I wanted to see what your pattern is if you're left on your own. If you were at home and you began to get into a fight like this, would it continue further? Would it stop? How would it end? What would happen next? You must have that data, and you must have the data. Anybody who's going to lose control enough to get really angry in your office is highly likely to be throwing real tantrums at home and possibly be violent. So you want to get that information. And if that's so, that counts as one of those symptoms that we talked about earlier. And on the issue of dangerousness, you deal with a symptom immediately. You set up a system of what they're going to do if they begin to blow a fuse, so that they're both safe. And usually the system needs to be some variation of separation, either the kind of separation where they each go into their own room and breathe deeply and do like that first exercise I did with you, and you want to teach them those skills, how they soothe themselves, because often people who get angry don't have self-soothing skills. So make sure they have self-soothing skills. Make sure they have a very clear contract about what each of them are supposed to do if they're getting into a fight. Make it clear that they each have responsibility to do their part. Have a very clear contract on that. Any questions on that? Yeah, that's one of those things you don't mess around with. You get that crystal clear, and then you practice it. You practice disengaging. The more violence potential there is, the more you have to be absolutely certain that they have a system that they feel secure with, and it's automatic no matter how upset they get. Yes, question.
Yeah, I had a question about what you do with the person who you're left in the room with and how you avoid splitting. You know, what if the pattern is that one partner is always the one who gets explosive or...
I'll give you an example of today. I talked with him about how he got so angry there and how that was similar to what he'd been doing at home and what the steps were in the buildup of his anger. And the thing he had said that infuriated his wife
this is a little complex, but the man stayed in. The wife stomped off. She was the one who looked angry at the moment, but he's the one with the real anger problem. And at home, he's the one that throws things. So we talked about how he works himself up step by step by going over and over things that she did or that his boss did or whatever. So he began to see the pattern of how he gets himself worked up. And we talked about the magic question. The magic question, as soon as you're beginning to get angry, is, what do I want? Anger is coercive attempts, usually. There's a whole chapter in anger which I suggest you augment this with in my book. But generally, anger is a coercive attempt to get what you want. So you suggest to them, as soon as you're beginning to feel angry, stop. Take the anger as a red stoplight. Stop and ask yourself, what is it that I want? And he said, oh, I didn't want to shovel the driveway anymore. I wanted to just put down the shovel and go to work. That's what you have to do, or at least figure how you can go about doing that. Then when his wife came back in, he and I were able to explain to her that he really had said that hurtful thing to her as part of a pattern that he was now beginning to understand. And that even though he'd said that hurtful thing, he put that comment in perspective, that he has that thought from time to time, but really there's compensating thoughts that make that only a small part of the truth. Okay, so he put that thought in context for her. He and I together. And we used it for him and for her to see what their pattern had been of escalation. Does that answer the question? Okay. So then neither of them felt picked on. They felt that it was a constructive part of learning what their process is and changing the pattern. So those are two techniques. The caucus, where you meet with one and ask the other one please to leave. And where you have them close their eyes and right away go into relaxation exercise, visualization. Okay, that's symptom reduction. Let's look at how we would help this couple walk through a conflict. I'm going to run real quickly through a couple of different techniques that you can use as they begin to get heated. Okay, so you start fighting. Can you pick up, just repeat what you did last
time. Hell, I can't believe you've been giving our daughter money.
You're saying that you get really distressed when he gives her money?
Yes.
Okay. What am I doing there? I'm doing two things. I can see that this is an issue they have to settle real quickly. But as soon as they face each other and start going at it, they go at each other. So I'm going to begin to make it go through me. Now, in general, in marital therapy, you want them to deal with each other. But if your goal is to get to a conclusion, a resolution of an immediate problem, hey, calm it down by going through you. And then the second technique I use is each thing she says in that angry way, I detoxify. I detoxify by taking out the angry, accusative voice and saying it as I statements rather than you statements. Okay. Can you pick it up again from there?
Sure. It's my money. If I want to help her, it's my money.
You say that for you, it's an issue of whoever's money it is ought to be able to make the decision. Is that your concern?
I don't understand. I don't understand your concern. I don't understand her concern. That's her daughter. She needs help.
So for you, when she needs help, you really want to pitch in there?
Yes.
Okay. The second principle here is you want to be sure you're getting at what concerns are and not getting stuck on positions. Again, that's the stuff we've talked about before, about moving from stage to stage, not getting stuck in positional bargaining. I want to give her money. No, you can't give her money. But getting at what the underlying concerns are. Okay. For matters of brevity, the other thing you want to be sure you get at is a lot of summarizing statements, because that reassures people that they're being heard. The single most inflammatory thing, other than accusations and blame, that kind of negative thing, is not being heard. Summarizing statements make people feel that their data is being taken into account. By the end of the session, you want to hope that you'll be at the point where you can begin to talk solutions. Thank you. Okay. We didn't get at all the issues. You could fill in the gaps there. The point here is the techniques rather than the issues. So detoxifying by restating in a non-inflammatory way what the concerns are, going through you and keeping them on concerns and making sure they really feel heard. Those are four basic techniques for keeping the situation calm as you're walking through. The anger is your help. The anger usually tells you where there's a really important issue. It's your guide to those underlying deeper concerns. So enjoy the anger. When the anger comes, you can relax and say, oh, great, we're right close to a core concern. Your attitude of relaxation is probably the single most important factor in how inflammatory or calmed down they get. Now, I've instructed Hal and Heidi to stay tough, but in fact, most people, once you use the detoxifying statement, once they feel really heard, they calm down. And the whole session will not be angry. Okay. Let's say we wanted to use the anger not to get at core concerns and work your way through an issue, but use it for process. Okay. Can you go at it one more time?
Hal, you can't keep giving her money like this. It's just not right.
Well, it's my money, and she needs...
What do you mean, your money?
Hold on, you guys. It sounds like you got real upset in there. Can you feel that anger boil?
Yes.
Yeah. And could you hear your voice rising? Okay, is that something you do often at home? Your voice go up like that?
Yes.
Okay, let's look at that a bit. Because my hunch is if you're doing it, it's well-intended. Close your eyes for just a sec. And thinking of that rise in tension and in volume, what's that intended to do?
You want me to answer that?
Yeah. Can you see what... If you look at that in the best possible light, I mean, I know you're slightly embarrassed now that your voice went up like that, but if you think of it as something that's really intended to do something positive, what's it supposed to do?
Well, I feel like he's not hearing what I'm saying to him, I guess.
Uh-huh.
That he doesn't listen to what I'm saying.
So you're turning up the volume so he'll hear you. Okay. And as your eyes are closed, can you think of other people, maybe from your family, that used to use that technique to get heard? Who were you picturing?
My father, especially.
Yeah. Okay, and did it work for him? Did he get himself heard?
Yes and no.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay, I'm going to cut it off for now.
Let's look at what we're doing. We're taking the, quote, bad behavior, the angry behavior, and regarding that as a solution, thinking back on solutions and concerns, we're assuming that that's a solution to some very legitimate concerns. So by asking what the intention is, that opens the possibility of our then, having identified the concerns, coming up with a better solution. So I can then validate to Heidi, you know, it's important to you and it's important to everybody that they be heard. And probably in your family of origin, that was the best way to get heard. It worked for your father, at least. Did it work for you also? Sometimes,
yes,
maybe.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. It clearly doesn't work with Hal. Is that your impression?
Yes.
Hal, what happens to you when her voice goes out?
I get mom too.
Yeah, that's what it looked like to me. And you're pretty good at it. Okay. You want to validate that it's well-intended because that gives them permission to let go of it and that there can be an even better solution. So there the strategy is you identify the angry behavior as very well intended, just not very effective. Okay, that's the ways of using anger constructively to your benefit as a therapist and to their benefit as patients. Any other questions on that? Go ahead.
A lot of times, at least in the couples I get, what she's talking about, I'm not heard.
Yes.
It is kind of a process to a real deal, and the man is very solution-oriented, and he doesn't know how to do that.
That's a whole new training for a lot of men.
Yes, a lot of women too.
Well, I'm being a man is what I'm thinking. We will try to find solutions.
Yes, and the tendency to move too quickly to solutions and to not realize that half the solution is giving evidence that you're taking the other person seriously. Yeah, absolutely.
One more last question. Go ahead.
Do you have sort of an average number of sessions that you find you tend to do with couples? Do you?
I'd say there is an average number of sessions for each type of couple. And as with any psychophysiology, it depends on how pathological their childhood were. If you see people who are really damaged, they're super touchy and they have terrible skills. They'll take a long time, a year or more. If you see people who are generally pretty healthy, but real hung up on some specific issue, like she got pregnant and one of them wants to just have an abortion and the other one says no way, or I mean, there are some issues that are inherently more difficult, then just a couple sessions with you helping them get into the underlying concerns and just guiding them, they'll get through it. I would say the more skill deficits, the longer the therapy. The more there's just specific issues that need resolution, the shorter the therapy. I'd like to conclude with one last thought, which is that for any of this to work, you have to have two things. Number one, you have to really believe that all conflicts can move in a cooperative way to resolution. And number two, you've really got to have crystal clear the skills that you implement in your own life all the time, routinely, automatically, hardly with a thought, that keep you and your relationships moving smoothly from conflict to resolution. That puts a big burden on us, because we therapists are people as well. But I think along with the burden comes a great opportunity, that we're very, very lucky to have a career that gives us skills that also makes our lives better. So on that happy note, thanks for coming today. Yeah.
This concludes part 3 of the lecture series, Working with Couples in Conflict, Essential Skills.